Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm looking down.
By our very own Jay Hatter with the musical stylings of Shout Even Shy. So we're a few minutes late because we have some technical difficulties. Hopefully Blog Talk will behave itself and not kick us off again. With me now, I am Pretty Bird, and welcome to Under the Bus, where today we are going to discuss those questions of love and life, where when is... when do we know, how can we tell where that if we're being tested for fortitude or futility, when do you know to fight for what you want in love or life, and when do you take all those obstacles as the universe guiding you in a different direction? Because the only difference is the end result and how much pain you're willing to take, in my opinion. So we are going to discuss, and I'm kind of all excited about it because I know nothing and I learn something every time I have one of these shows. So in the studio, we have Rack and Tor. Say hello, hello.
Hello, hello. The view under the bus, huh? It's hard being a pretty bird under the bus.
It really is. My little lungs are filled with exhaust, and I might be a little cuckoo, but, you know, since that's a bird, I'm good. And we have Miss Sweet Pea. How are you? Are you on mute? I cannot hear you. Are you there? Are you there? Are you there? Well, it
She's
looks like you're there. And your little red light is on. So if you are muted, unmute and come join the conversation whenever. So we are discussing all of these things of life. Because here's the thing. If I start off discussing love and all the wonderful things, you know, love conquers all, woohoo, yay. But you know, what happens to you sometimes, love just isn't enough. I mean, you can love somebody with every fiber of your being, but circumstances could just suck. So do we persevere? Do we try again? Do we hope for better timing? Do we trust that at some point it will conquer all? Or is enough enough? Like, when is enough enough? How much pain do we have to endure before that happiness? And who's to say what's going to make us happy in the end? Anyway, so, you know, how much can you fight? How long can you fight before it becomes detrimental to your emotional well-being? I am curious to know, because I am constantly in the thick of battle in my own head, and depending on my mood and how tired and exhausted I am, it depends on what the, you know, that just weighs on what I think in the moment. So tell me, Rock, what side do you fall on? Do you fall on fortitude or futility?
Oh, I'm a big Neanderthal. I fight. That's it. I believe in it. I'm going to hold my ground. I'm going to, you know, to my dying breath and to my own detriment, I'm going to fight for it. Big stupid man.
Big stupid man, huh? Well, I don't think there's anything stupid in fighting for... Oh, okay. Sweet is calling back in. Can you hear me now?
I can always hear you. Can you hear me?
We can. Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I am good. I was looking for a poem for tonight, and then a Block Talk lost its mind, and now I can't even find where it was or the name of it. I know that it was like 9 months ago, and I have no clue what I was doing. So I had a poem for tonight. I'm sure I'll find it at some point.
Oh,
so, I'm telling you. So where do you fall on that line of love, or how far, how much do you fight? How much pain do you go through? How many obstacles are there before you're like, we will persevere, or you know what, life is saying I need to go in that direction, because I have no discernment. I have no clue about anything ever. That is my normal state of affairs. So are you fortitude or futility? Like, where are your boundaries? Like, what is it, a test of how strong you are and how much you love and what you're willing to fight for? Or is it a test that, as you know, to how many times can you bang your head against the wall to the same end?
Wow, is that a loaded question for me?
For me as well, which is why I pose it to the world.
It's really a loaded question for me.
So take a little bite and not the whole thing. In the grand scheme of nothing in particular, can love conquer all?
No. It cannot.
But,
oh, that's definitive.
But it's worth fighting for. So
I think that you can love someone very, very much, but there are things you can just not get over.
And then does that become a test of will, of inner strength, or a sign that, you know, I just can't? Because
it's just a matter. It's just a matter of looking at somebody or something and just seeing it over and over again. Like, I don't know, like a blood stain you can't get out of a carpet or something that's where that blood stain is. That's where the crime happened. And no matter how you can forgive somebody that murdered something or something, that blood stain is always there. That's where that murder took place. That's there. And to be reminded of that pain and that depth of that pain over and over and over and over and over again. It's just something you cannot mentally, emotionally, or physically take because it's just too much of a toll on you. And it's not fair for you to go over and over again, no matter how much you may have loved that person. And may still love that person.
So does time heal all wounds? If you think that given enough time, kind of like when you lose a loved one, I mean, it's always going to hurt. You'll always miss them. It's always there. And if you think about it, it'll hurt just like it happened today. But enough time passes and it's no longer in the forefront. It's there, but it's, you know, a few chapters back and no longer in your face. And that makes a big difference in how you remember things and how, like, you can remember, like, you know, your mother who passed and with more joy than pain. Does it work the same with romantic love? And when they cut off a limb of trust and now you're left with this gaping open wound that is oozing forever, do you just get used to it and no longer feel that pain? But every now and then you still got to wipe up the mess because it doesn't go away. You know what I mean? Does it become less prevalent and as such more tolerant or tolerable?
I possibly it can be, and I think maybe it does for some people, but I don't know if it does for everybody.
See, I'm hoping for all happy endings and all good things and everything is worth it. But, you know, my natural state of affairs is like, who are you kidding? And I'm trying to fight over my sense of black and white, left and right, right and wrong, because I'm very
Everything is gray.
Yeah, I don't do well with gray. It is not my happy place. Like,
but it's all about the person.
It is. And when they're fighting with you and they're fighting towards things and there's compromises that aren't like pulling teeth, it's a easier journey. There are less rocks, less forks, less choices if you're both willing to hurt and mend, because make no mistake, healing hurts. Healing hurts as much as the damage that was done. But the end result of that is a barely visible scar. You know, it just takes time to get there, time and perseverance. Now, that brings me back to, you know, is it, you know, fortitude or futility? Because I am a big believer in the universe speaks to us. Energy speaks to us. We get a sense of people, of things, of whatever it is, of all the things around us. So if something doesn't feel right, or there's something in the back of your mind, or you are pulled just through your spirit to somebody that you're bound to, and we will use that lovely, generic, overused term of soulmate, which doesn't necessarily have to be a husband. It could be a best friend. It could be whoever. It doesn't matter who it is. You're attached that way. You're attached that way, and you're always looking to be pulled towards each other. Okay. In that situation, even if you would walk away, even if they lie to your face, you still believe, because it's deeper than that surface, and people are fallible, and it's a bigger emotion than just your standard everyday I love you, which sometimes is a bunch of placating bullshit. And it's this is a much more visceral thing, you know, when you've got that connection. And so you want to forgive, or you try to forgive, or you try to get past the innate black and white of who you are, where your whole life you're like, I would never. And you find yourself in a place going, maybe one more time. maybe, you know, I understand that there was pain. I understand that pain makes you crazy. I understand that these are choices that felt beyond control. I understand all this stuff hurts just the same anyway. And then how much do you compromise yourself? But here's the thing. If all of these things are screaming in your face that you find intolerable in anybody else, but you're willing to make concessions for someone, at what point do you stop? At what point is it not fighting for the greater good and just beating yourself up because you want what you want? I mean, where is that line? And this is driving me stinking nuts because as far as I can tell, there is no right answer. Everything is wrong, or everything is right, but I'm not that girl, so everything is wrong. And the only way to know is at that end result, is if you eventually find joy at the end, whether it's together or not together, then you know it was the right path. But if you're going to be sitting there, you know, 20 years from now with the what ifs and if onlys, then maybe you didn't make the right choice. And then what does that say? If I find myself in that position, what does that say about me? I didn't fight enough. I didn't love enough. I didn't want enough. I'm a failure, you know, or I gave up, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not this, or if only, and then you beat yourself up forever because you didn't get the result you wanted. But if you're sitting there trying forever for that one result and it's not happening, how long are you supposed to sit in that pain? It's quite the conundrum. If this is, it's like eviscerating pain, this is not a happy place. Welcome to my show.
I think this at some point the universe steps in and takes you down the path that, you know, it's going to take you down regardless of what you want. What we want doesn't matter. It's, you know.
Then why fight in the first place? If the universe is going to do what the universe is going to do, it's going to end up however it's going to end up. Whenever it ends up that way, why fight?
Because that's part of, again, the grand design, I think.
But how do you know when
fighting,
to fight?
Fighting is part of it. Well, that's exactly the point that you're making. You don't know. It's just we're bobbing along on this path that we really have no control over where we wind up. And
but if
you know,
we don't have the control, why were we given free will?
I like to think that we have no control over the destination, but we can affect the path, the length of the path that it takes to get there.
Okay. And what were you going to say, Sweet?
I believe more in the chaos theory that everything that we make a decision on affects someone somewhere, because I truly believe that every decision I make is going to make someone happy and make someone else miserable. No matter how hard I try, I will never make everyone happy. Somewhere along the line, every decision I make makes someone joyous and makes someone cry. That's the way it works. No matter. So you have to make decisions that focus somehow on your joy. And that may sound horribly narcissistic and rude and unkind and self-centered, but I've seen it over and over and over and over again when, you know, you take everyone else's feelings into consideration. Someone is always hurt, no matter what you do. And every time you try to please everyone, it never works out. And generally, you're hurting yourself. And as far as your path in life, you know, you can sit there and go, oh, what if I did this, and what if I did this, and oh, my God, regrets, if I would have chose this road or I would have chose that road, and I could have missed this or I was wrong on this. No matter who or what, the grass is not always greener on the other side. And I have been in some awful relationships. I have been in some great relationships. And I have had razor blades on one side and sunflowers on the other. So I don't like to sit and say, oh, I should have gone this way, I should have gone that way. I am not a person that looks back and what they should have done. My biggest issue is the what if I don't do it right going forward. I'm horrible at that. I sit there and I will be like I was going to go meet you. Like, I spent 3 days going, okay, what if I say this and she says that? What if I say this and I don't say this right? What if? I play conversations, every possible conversation, over and over and over and over in my head.
We are kindred.
Sure. Huh?
So we are kindred.
You're kindred.
I was quite nervous, by the way, of somehow disappointing you, because I felt very, very close to you before we met, and I didn't want anything to undermine that on any level. I was really, really aware about, you know, what, you know, online versus reality. And I get, in the grand scheme of things, who gives a crap? We are who we are, and, you know, we're good. And you're fabulous in person and everything. And it was wonderful. But,
yeah,
I was very too. But I'm also with you. I'm like, whatever choices we make are made. You can't spend all this time going, you know, with the what ifs and the if onlys. But when it comes to matters of the heart, there's never a – okay, how can I put this in a way that makes sense and doesn't make me sound fully cuckoo? Okay, there's this. When you meet somebody you are drawn to, and I'm not just talking, you know, animal magnetism, and I'm not just talking intellectual. When you meet somebody that you have known souls and eons, you know, there's a pull there, and it is an easy pull. There is no doubt. There is no anything. It's right there, and you recognize that. It's amazing. And then life wants to creep in, and all of and all of these two separate things that you're trying to somehow meld together. And it doesn't always work out. But you will always search for, regardless of where life takes you, as you guys ebb and flow, you always search for that same ease, and it won't happen again. It's reality of circumstance sets in. It's never that easy. Everything is still there. The affection is easy. The knowing each other is easy, but the sustainability is not. And it's a heartbreaking situation. And yeah, you can only go from here forward. What's done is done. You can't change that. You can only do your best to either help assuage pain you've caused, or try not to be as hurt the next time, and not try not to hurt others, at least for me. And because I know some people that are a little emotionally sadistic, and their whole entire goal is to somehow make people cry and then think they're innocent. I tend to not hang around with those people because they're evil, but I still know them, and I'll never understand it. But we've all had crushes, and we've all had these pseudo-relationships that last, you know, 2 weeks or a month or however long it is, and it doesn't matter if it's an online connection or a real-life connection. We've had these things that are profound in the moments that they're there, and they're painful when they're not. And so where's the distinction? Shouldn't there be... And I hate that word should, because should really shouldn't exist, because there is no should. Things just kind of unfold the way they unfold. But you would think that in any kind of world, chaotic or not, that there would be some kind of discernible delineation between where you're intended and whatnot, and what you should probably stay away from. And you would think that there would be very clear obstacles, but we're so ingrained in society that love, you got to fight, you got to fight, you got to fight. I'm like, no, and I never believed that until recently, because I'm fighting, but I never believed it, because the loving is the easy part. It's everything else that needs work. A relationship, especially a long-term relationship, whether it's a friendship or romantic, it takes work. It is not an easy thing. There's a lot of give and take. There's a lot of moodiness. There's a lot of forgiveness. There's a lot of compromise. And even in that, you still have to stay true to yourself, because otherwise you can be lost in the mix. So it is work, and it is worth the work, because, you know, the love is there. Your person is there. The support is there. So but it shouldn't be hard to get to that point. You know? It's the loving is supposed to be easy. And we have AP in the studio. Say hello, AP.
Hello, pretty bad. How are you?
Hello, hello. Do you have to read and run, or can you hang with us?
Well, I was going to hang for a little while, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. We are discussing, does love conquer all? When is the test fortitude versus futility? When do you know when to stop fighting
yes.
for someone you love? And when the
yes.
universe is telling you to turn around?
Yes. Yes. Very, very interesting question, Pretty Bird. Very interesting question. I figure it's when you get kicked out of the matrimonial bed that's a pretty good indication.
And before you get to that point, when you are working towards that sacred matrimony, when you are in love and you are, and I was just saying, the loving part should be the easy part. It's what happens when things get in the way and it's coming at you sideways? Do you fight through it because you know the love's there?
Try,
or
for sure. Yeah.
For how long?
You
for how
as
hard?
As you possibly can. Well, you know, in my case, I tried for years, Pretty Bird. I did. You know, you don't just let it go, and you don't just let it go and not work. You try as hard as you possibly can to keep it working, and that means, you know, you put in extra effort and you redouble your efforts to try and make it work. But unfortunately, sometimes, despite the best of intentions and the best of work, you just got to let some things go when they get to the point where, you know, they're just not working for people.
And let's say hello to Lady A. Hey, Lady A.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
So you're good. I have another question then. So you're fighting and all of this, and it doesn't work out. So let's just say the universe
yeah.
threw the obstacles, turned you around, and now you're not
yep.
together. I understand
yep.
that there are situations where you fall out of love with people. I understand this in theory. I understand this, you know, but for my own personal sense of self in my entire life, if I loved you once, a part of me will always love you. I may not want to tolerate you. I may want to punch you
yes.
in the throat and move on, but a part of me will always love you. I have never learned how to unlove somebody, which makes it a little difficult sometimes. So does that sadness, does that separation void ever fully heal?
Look, I think it does, depending on the processes you go through at the end of that relationship, Pretty Bird. Like that's sort of where I am at the minute, is at the end of the, we're actually formalizing the end of a relationship, yeah. And I think what that does is that helps you sort of move on, because of the sort of the lawyer's involvement and the sort of
closure,
you know, the sort of formality of it all, if that makes sense. You know, I'm in the midst of, I think we just actually exchanged all the documentation of disclosure today, and that's taken 6 weeks, 220 emails to my lawyer. And so by the time you do sort of that sort of exercise, you've sort of the last vestiges that were there are long since gone, you know.
Well, there's a certain amount of desensitization that comes when you're going through the minutia that is the finality of a relationship like that, especially legally. And it's easy to be like, glad that's done, you know. But as far as the relationship itself outside of the formalities, you have to mourn. You have to. It's the death of a future, the death of a life that was a promise. It's heartbreaking. And even if there's a lot of anger,
it depends on how angry you are. I mean, it doesn't all, you know, anger gets you through a lot of things. And what you're speaking of with going through like a divorce, sometimes the anger is more than the, you know, the regret or the longing or the hurt.
But anger
isn't the
opposite of love.
Anger.
Apathy is. So if you are still angry.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that sometimes anger helps. And I think that a lot of people, when they get to the place where they're separating, the love has been kicked out of you. Sometimes it's a situation you don't realize. It's a surprise. But for a lot of people, it's, you know, you take so much and take it and take it and take it because they, you know what you can do. It rallies you forward to a new life. That's just my opinion.
But
that speaks to me, and there's no judgment or whatever. It's just I never learned how to unlove somebody, and if it can be, if you are hurt and angry, there is still emotion there. If you're apathetic and don't give a crap, well, you know, all is said and done, be good, live your life, be well, see you later, don't cross my path again. The thing okay, I'm going to take my sister and just throw her up underneath things. Love you, Leslie. Okay. She has had two marriages. And from those marriages, she has had two kids with each husband. And she doesn't regret any of it. But she was glad to see them go. And it wasn't until she met who she is with now that she broke down to me. And she was like, I don't think I had ever truly been in love. And there is that certain sense of things. You think what love is, and there's a certain amount of affection, and there's all of these things that work well together. But there are different depths of affection. And I don't have a whole lot of that when it comes romantically speaking. I am all in or all out because I'm very black and white about things. So if I am attached, if I welcome somebody into the truth of my pain, I expect them to stay. So if they don't, it will be painful forever. I don't care if they hurt me. I don't care if I can't trust them. I don't care if I can't get over it, if they did something absolutely horrible. I kind of hate myself sometimes because I still hold a certain amount of affection. It does not go away. I'm not lucky enough to be one of those people. I would really love to hate some people, but I'm just not built that way.
I think that's certainly a possibility and can be true, but I think that it depends on what's going on. It depends on what's happened in the relationship because I certainly don't have any love for my ex-husband.
Because abuse aside, because if there is abuse, whether it's mental abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, that you can beat the affection out of somebody. You know, that is kind of above and beyond what I would put in the range of, you know, loving. You know, that isn't loving. That's torturous. You know,
that's violent.
So, so that's to me is a whole different animal. I mean, just like, you know, God forbid my husband ever starts to like, I don't give a crap what he does to me by comparison to anything he might do to my kids. That is something unforgivable. I mean, he's not that guy. I mean, I wouldn't have been with him for 28 years if he was, but he's not that guy.
Yeah.
But
I would throw 28 years out the window if he got a knock on the head and became that guy, because no, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, so abuse is kind of outside of the bell curve, you know? And, and I mean, that is like an instant annulment in my lovely little Catholic marriage. So if God says, screw you, then we could all say, screw you. They don't deserve to be married anyway. To all the abusers out there, y'all can kiss my butt. You're horrible people. Okay. And but inside a loving relationship or a relationship that had love sustained without abuse, it's a difficult thing to mourn through, to, you know. And then how do you not beat yourself up at some point, even though you've done all that you can, you know, you've gone above and beyond, you know, all of this, there's still that sadness, you know? But my question for tonight is, how do you know the difference? How do you know when to fight and when the universe is kicking you in the teeth? How do you fight destiny? Do you fight for destiny, or is fighting for destiny really fighting against your own fate? How the heck do you know the difference? Because I have no stinking clue. It all looks the same.
I think it's pretty good that you know. You know?
I agree.
Know in your heart of hearts when it's there and when it's gone, and you sort of know when you're on the edge, and you sort of know, I had a really good sense when it sort of stopped. Yeah? And you know, once it's gone, you can try your hardest to find it again and to, you know, go down the path to try and to try and right things. But at the end of the day, you sort of know. I wish I could tell you how, but I sort of knew it was gone.
Yeah.
Was it gone for you or gone for her?
Sorry, pretty bit.
Was it gone for you or gone for her?
I reckon it was gone for us both. I really do. I reckon it was gone for us both. I don't know who it went for first, but I reckon it was gone for us both. And I actually, you know, a year or two before, maybe a year before we actually formally sort of separated, I said to my eldest, I said, you know, this is going down this path. You know, I want you to know that, you know, this is happening, so it's not a surprise.
See, and it's that time, that where things aren't bright and shiny, when things are... See, okay, first, my happy place in any relationship, whether it's a friendship or whatever, is if we can, like, belch at each other and laugh, we are good. Because I'm not talking out in public, not to dinner, but, you know, there are very few people outside of my family that I will answer the door in my jammies with a hair mess, not give a crap if my house is just come in, because I know that when I don't even have to say, don't mind the mess, they don't give a crap. They don't judge. They're good. And if I'm having a really bad time, they'll help me clean. So, you know, love those people. But they are few and far between. Now, that is my happy place. When I don't have to be anything but who I am in that moment, whether it is depressed or angry or sad or happy or annoyingly peppy, if I can be who I am through all of my crap, and there's a lot of crap that is in my head, then that's my happy place. And it takes a long time to get there. So I tend to want to fight to keep that. But the sad thing is that people go through their own shit. People are going through stuff that is hard for them to talk about, which is hard for somebody like me, because I tend to feel people, and if they don't want to talk about it, and I'm just like, hey, well, I know that there's this, and they're just like, oh, how dare you tell me about myself, because nobody likes to know people see them, you know? But I don't know how not to talk to people. I don't know how not to be honest. I don't know how to say how it makes me feel. Your whatever it is you're going through looks like this to me, and I want to be there for you. But it is also hurting me that you won't let me. And they don't always need to hear that. But being that I'm stupid open, sometimes it makes people shut down.
or sometimes I expect other people to be just a hair open than they're comfortable with because I share so much. And it's an unfair expectation. And I know that because it's human nature to expect people to react the way we would react. And the truth is nobody ever will. You know, we gravitate towards like things when you're surrounded by the same people over and over. We, you know, reactions tend to overlap, but that's about as close as you get. And
I think pretty good. There's other sort of ancillary things that sort of come in. Like for example, you know, for me, I was traveling an enormous amount. You know, and so. You know, physically being out on the road and in planes, trains and automobiles for weeks and months, I think sort of grinds down a connection over a period of time, for want of a better word.
It does.
I think, you know, health challenges, particularly if they're to do with kids, I think they grind down, you know, a relationship. I think there's a series of things that sort of act as spurs, if you will, to a relationship, and sometimes you do things because of the almighty dollar, and you need the money in order to make things work and all that stuff. But that certainly, you know, things like travel, which is a choice, most of the time.
I can understand
that. You know. Grind things down.
Well,
a better way to describe it.
My husband traveled about 3 weeks out of every month for 15 plus years. And let me tell you what, it completely sucked. It was horrible and I hated it. And I understood it and it was fine. And he worked with explosives. So he'd be gone shooting however many shows. And if he forgot to text me because he worked a 20-hour day and he's exhausted, I can't sleep because I'm thinking he's all blown to bits. And it happened once. And so once that happened, everything was anxiety for me. And that was hard for him to understand because for him, nothing changed. It was hard for him
Can I just interject? Can I just interject with that travel thing? My ex-husband worked. He was a workaholic, and he worked all the time. He found stuff to do when it was vacation and the whole nine yards. When my last baby was born, he sent his friend to drive me home and things like that. And so, but aside from that, what counted for me, I was able to stay home with the kids. And so I never begrudged him working extra hours or anything like that. What I begrudged him were the hours he didn't give me when he was home.
Well, I was getting to that. And the trouble is this, is that when somebody has gone a lot and they're exhausted and they're working 20-hour days, 16-hour days, and they come home and really all they want is a minute. All they want is time to just exist outside of any expectation to sit there and my computer just completely blanked out. Okay, and decompress a little bit. But after 3 weeks of not seeing somebody, the kids are jumping on them, and there's all this stuff that needs to be done, and maybe the house isn't spotless at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because I'm still helping them with their homework, and all of this stuff, and there's exasperation because all they want to do is take a minute, and you don't have a minute to give them at that point, then it's stressful. And not for nothing, I have an expectation that when we build a life with someone, and Sweet and Rack, you tell me how y'all are when I say this. When you build a life with somebody and that life changes, whether it's a job that takes them away from each other or whatever it is, when that changes after however many years, the expectation doesn't. You expect to be ravished. You expect to be wanted. You expect to be missed. You expect that it's a joy to come home because it's a joy to have them home. And it's not. And it's not that it's not. It's just that, you know, people need to decompress. People need to be whatever. And so you can't just be like, I missed you, and have somebody say, you know, give me a minute, because it feels like crap. It feels like rejection. That has nothing to do with the truth of it, but that's what it feels like. And so if nobody verbalizes any of it, and they don't explain it, and they don't understand how everybody's action affects the other, it's not an easy thing to overcome at all. I mean, it's not easy anyway, but people don't talk. Mm. People would rather not have the fight. People understand there's something that's not right, and they're like, you know, when I have time, we'll definitely get on it, but then the time never comes, and it just grows. Mm. And, you know, I talk things to death, which isn't always a good thing, but I don't know, like Rack, you with your situation, did you need that decompressed time? Did you have expectations? And if so, when did that change? And at what point do you say enough is enough, by the way, when you walk in the door and you're faced with all the anxiety and all the stress and all the good steam on? Like, it's just an unfair situation. Okay, are you muted, Rack? Rack, I know you're still there. Or Sweet, or anyone, feel free to answer.
Well, I'm interjecting, but I think that...
Well, Sweet had just started to say something. Hold on a second, Lady A. Sweet had just started to say something.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. You can talk right after.
For me, it was the other way around. I was the one on the flights. I was the one going all over the place to investigate, you know, HR issues and employee issues. So I was the one on the plane. I was the one gone. I was, you know, always not at home. So not when my kids were little, but when they were a little older and stuff. So, you know, but I was always close to my kids via the phone, technology, so I had that kind of going for me. But when I got home, it was, okay, yeah, I need a minute. I need something different. But there's something different, I think, for, and I don't mean to be, I guess it may sound sexist, but there are a lot of women at work. They go home, they do their housework, they make dinner, they take care of the kids, they do all of that. So there was never an expectation that I wouldn't walk in that door, take care of my house, get my laundry in order, take care of my husband. That was always my mindset. Would I want that time to go take a bubble bath, have a glass of wine, to stop from whatever time zone I was in, to back home to the time zone? I would have loved that. But the expectation was, you're a mom, you're a wife, you have a house, you have thank you cards, you have birthday cards to get out, you have whatever the kids need, whatever bake sale, whatever graduation, you had to get that done too, because you may have worked, you had all that to do too. So I never had an expectation of myself other than that, nor would I have thought my family would have had any other expectation for me.
You know, that is a big testament to that double standard that exists to this day, where as women we tend to want to or feel the need to take care of everything. It's we're the mom, you know, where a lot of men, not to say anything against either one of you, because it's everybody's different and I don't think anything of anything, but guys tend to be really good at expecting to provide for things, and that's a big deal and a big thing. But to be honest, I don't care how much my husband provided me, and he provided well enough that I got to stay home with my kids, but it was those evenings where he would finish dinner without me having to ask him that really meant more to me than anything he could bring home in a paycheck. It's those little tiny things. If he saw I was tired, or if he heard stress in a text even, and he would text me back a couple hours later and be like, don't bother cooking, I've got it, and he'll bring whatever. It's those little tiny things that you notice, that you pick up, where maybe it's not so much an expectation, because I don't think he ever thought that he was going to walk in the house and take care of a million things, you know? And I made damn sure he didn't have the expectation that he was going to walk into a perfectly clean house with perfectly behaved children, you know. So
I viewed it very differently, Pretty Bird. I mean, the first thing almost always that would happen when I came back from overseas is that, you know, I knew I had to do the supermarket shopping because there'd be nothing in the house, you know. So it was always my responsibility to not just pay the bills and get stuff done, but it was to do the supermarket shopping as well as doing the cooking and the kids' lunches.
Oh,
and,
so you were the supermom. You were like, sweet.
I'll be first to admit that my ironing is absolutely atrocious and my vacuum cleaning is pretty ordinary. But apart from that, no, I was there. You know, that's what I would do. And I thought that was important because I had a couple of older boys and I just wanted to show them that it wasn't good enough just to go and, you know, go and bring the money in. You had to actually share the household task because, you know, that's the only way that things got done, you know. So,
and that's wonderfully commendable. It really, really is. I know that a few years back when I had when my back started to give me issues and I couldn't cook every day and I couldn't sweep every day and I couldn't do stuff every day, I didn't have to say a word. He picked up the slack. He picked up the slack hard after, and like I said, he worked those long, long, long days, and he didn't think anything of it. So, you know, I'm going to keep him around for a while because he's pretty good. But it made up for, to be honest, those little things that I never asked him to do would make up for a lot of him being away and a lot of him not being able to give me any kind of real attention when he was home, if he was home. Because sometimes he'd be gone 3 days or 4 days, come back, repack a suitcase, and be gone for another 2 weeks. Like, maybe I would get him for 8 hours, you know? And that was very difficult. But it was less difficult when he picked up the slack when he was home, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And which speaks to, you know, societal roles and norms and whatnot, which, by the way, I don't buy into. I think everybody is equal, and in a relationship, everybody should be able to do everything. Now, people have their preferences, but if I am sick of the dog, you know, somebody else better do the damn laundry. You know, I can't be the only person who knows how to work the machine, you know?
No, I don't think you want me doing the dishes.
Yeah, I can't even do the dishes. My hands drop everything. I have been banned from holding wet dishes on all fronts, you know, so I ain't mad at it either. But so it is an hour into my show, and we have yet to read poetry, so I'm going to go. I put K on the board. We're going to start there, and there is a SoundCloud, so let me know when you see her. You guys got her up?
We've got it. I've got it.
Awesome. Okay, and here she is.
In picture form sketches of undecorated truth. Okay. In black and white, transcribed per her eye, lithographed a stamped interception, whitewashed and hung out to dry, yesterday's burials in the trash can, discarded like an afterbirth afterthought. Cut the cord. Xeroxed on paper. Decimated. Verbalized in word-based trimmings. To slice down even the strongest of men. Chronicled and archived. Is a woman called. Mother. Never flowery. Diagrammatic in colon. Blocked out nor cut and dried love in dustin. Old hat cycles of the hats not to wear by eye. End poem.
You know, she has this way of phrasing things that make you think. Lithographed to stamped interception, whitewashed and hung out to dry. That, all those black and white lines with this side and that side and yesterday's burials in the trash can. You know, I wish it was that easy, you know. To leave, you know, to once you're over and done, you're over and done, but it's not. They linger. And that whole Xerox on paper decimated is kind of what the end of things feels like. It's like a shadow of itself, a reflection, something there in tangible black and white words to see and know that it was real and it is gone. And it's probably all my fault, but, you know, that's just my little take on things. And Lady A, what are your thoughts on Kay's poem?
Well, I thought the some of the wording was really very poignant, very hard to read even. Let me just point it out to you, and I think you already quoted it. When she talks about
afterbirth,
this is just a very painful piece. To slice down even the strongest of men, chronicled and archived, is the woman called mother. Like, how cold and unloving and frightening almost, I think, and this comes from a place very deep, and diagrammatic in culling, blocked out in her cut and dry love in dusting old hat cycles of the hats not to wear by eye, like really a very and relatable for me because my mother was very similar, and it just really struck deep, I guess, and I thought it was entirely sad.
Absolutely, and the ending of that feels like, you know, you'll never be good enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what I do, it's not meant for me, you know? And it's very painful. And Ragnator, what are your thoughts?
It almost feels like there's a resentment for the responsibility of being a mother. You know, there's a lot of work involved, a lot that she has to do, but it makes her feel used up. At least that's how it feels to me as I'm seeing it. I don't know. Well, it's like, you know, you were saying, or AP was saying, you know, if you don't contribute, then, you know, you're almost a drain on the equation. So, you know, if nobody's helping, if she's the only one doing it, and this is what's expected of her, it's no longer the loving role. It's the responsibility, and it's, you know, tough to deal with. It puts you in a different position. It even makes people look at you a little differently, you know? It's like, you know, it becomes expected of you to do these things. So where is that line, you know, kind of like what you're talking about? Is it done out of love or out of responsibility, you know? It starts to feel different, you know? I don't know. It's very emotional.
Yeah.
And Sweetie.
Man, I thought the line in here was so damn dark. Was, first off, I'm jealous because that's just extremely deep and disturbing. But it is an emotionally painful poem. And just a very, very well written and twisted. Very good job to Kay.
And AP, if you would comment on Kay's piece, and if you have a poem for us, throw yours up on the board.
Okie dokie. Look, it's a very sharp piece. It's got edges. And you can sort of feel the knife cutting as it goes down the page, and it's a very sharp poem, very sharply observed.
Absolutely. She has been, a lot of the pieces I've heard from her lately are very, even the ones that are colorful, are very, very eviscerating. Like if you are familiar with any of the edges of that pain, and like personally, it kind of rips those wounds open. So that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
You gotta love a poem that makes you think or feel. So that's definitely awesome. Oh, and before you read, let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. Hey, Deb, how are you?
Hello, Deb.
Hello, everyone.
It's
hey,
Deb,
how are you?
Today. Because, you know, Blog Talk is moody.
I know. It's annoying, too, isn't it?
It really
it
is. It's like it was 5-4 blank. Oh, all right. Thanks for my non-show.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, well, they don't do any kind of repair or update or maintenance on the weekends. So, you know, you just have to deal until they get around to us.
Well, hopefully they'll fix it
anyway.
And AP is up on the board, so whenever you're ready, AP.
Okie doke. Well, as I said, 220 emails to my lawyer in the space of the last 5 weeks. This is infected with disclosure, and it goes a little bit like this. It's called financial disclosure, and it's what's required here. It feels like being hit by a spur in the rump and parts very near. For upon a final separation, finances must be agreed, and that means orchestration of much information we'll need. I'm talking 2 years off bank or credit cards, period, same. Requirement, retirement records, even if blank, plus stacks of others yet to frame, like trusts and all your loans, of constitutions or agreements, every tax statement no moans, a screenshot of all increments. Finally, what is going on at work? Will your contract be resigned? All I can say, and is not a shirk, no current agreements bind. So for weeks, I've been under the wheels of a very big bus. Pickles and infection, little wonder. Desires remains, fester as pus. End poem.
Well, I kind of am really, really, really digging that you that under the bus is in there. I'm just kind of saying. But what a wonderful title to start that with, infected with disclosure. It is visceral from the get-go. And how delicate is your verbiage in your, you know, in the rump and parts very near, because nothing like a kick in the proverbial gut. For lack of a more descriptive term, and you delineate this in very kind of, when you said screenshots, it's kind of what this is. Each statement, each thought, each image, each thing that you had to present to define a lifetime in finances was like little screenshots, time stamped and cataloged, and that's how it ends. And it tickles an infection. Okay, a tickles an infection. Little wonder desires remain fester and pus. Well, you know what? I can absolutely see that. I mean, how does any of it live under the weight of all that? And this is wonderfully depicted. And I can see the conference room table, and I can see piles of paper, and I can see the exhaustion. You know. That and none of this is joyful. It is tedious and painful and very. While the images are stark, the verbiage is still delicate. Except for perhaps the festering pus, because that's a little vivid. But I absolutely love this, and that to me in the vein of tonight's topic is the obstacles absolutely told you to turn left instead of to fight on, because you know enough is enough, and sometimes while I hate the cop out of this phrase, but sometimes you know it is what it is. You know, at a certain point it can't be anything else. And that's a painful place to be. So I think that this is honest and kind of amazing. And Ms. Deborah Lee, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree, and I say that your aggravation and your frustration and the ache in those unnamed parts are absolutely oozing off the page. I found myself, by the time you got to the end of the reading, thinking of all the things that were going on in the world and thinking of something that you mentioned to me recently and thinking of all the things that you put in here, and I'm thinking, man, and yet you still manage to sound cheerful all the time. you got kicked around a lot right here just in this. Like I said, damn, AP.
See, it doesn't get better than that. I like the dams and the wow, and when it comes down to that one word, you know it's good. And so yep. Lady A, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's having gone through it myself and having gone through it with my sister-in-law and my brother, it is a painful process. It is something that's unpleasant, has to be done. But when you have one party not being honest, makes it even worse. And and that's what happens to a lot of people, guys and girls. They get to the place where they're the disclosure, and then you have one person that's, you know, lying through their teeth and hiding all the money and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Which is an unfortunate place to be, because you know there that's just disrespectful. I mean, there's just a certain amount of you know, have a little respect for what you went through and not be vile. But you know, people tend to be greedy at the end of things, because you know all of their give a darn is busted. And
and it doesn't even. It doesn't even have to be like I left without taking anything. I left without taking what was rightfully mine for all the years that I spent. Blah blah blah. Fast forward, when I got on my feet after I graduated nursing school and was working $600 student loans. My middle daughter, or my youngest daughter, had decided to go live with her father. And so, and my middle daughter had been living with him, because I had one, he had the other. But he had a free-for-all in the house and all that stuff, so who wouldn't want to go live there? Anyway, he called me up one day and said, you know, he said, I've got both girls here, now you're working, so I'm going to file for child support. I said, oh, I said, okay, that's good news. And I said, while you're at it, I said, I'm going to file with my lawyer, and you will be responsible for my student loan, my student loans, for me, my reentry into society after staying home with my children and looking after you and the kids in the house for 17 years. So we'll see you in court. And he never asked for any money again after that.
Well, there you go. And Sweet Pea, what are your thoughts on AP's poem?
Well, I think it's just natural with society that everybody wants to know the deposits, the withdrawals, and all of that when it comes to finances. But no one ever wants to know the really good stuff, like what were the deposits and the withdrawals in the bedroom? Because I think that would make much more finance. Fascinating things in court. Just saying. Because I think that's what courts should want to know. Who was the giver and who was the taker in the bedroom? Because, you know, that's what it is. Because
that comes with a whole psychological, mental damage, too. But let me tell you what, when that comes with its own psychological ramifications, you know,
I know.
Drive somebody crazy, both good or bad.
I know. Who cares what the bank statement says? Anybody can figure that out. Look at your taxes.
Because nobody lies on their taxes.
Well, you know. And that's so funny. And Rackentor, if you could comment on AP, and then you're up next.
Yeah, this touches a little close to home. I can relate to all of it. The financials are probably some of the most invasive things that you can, and it's exactly you know, because of, you know, people try to hide things and get away with things and one-up things,
yeah,
and, you know, this is what they feel like they're entitled to. And you know, I mean, you could argue till you're blue in the face about, you know, who's supposed to get what, but there's supposed to be a formula on the books, and the judge still deviates from that shit, so you can't win. the only comforting thing in this entire piece, AP, I want to point out that she's entitled to 50% of that pus. So you make sure she gets that.
So fester it up good. Before I play your SoundCloud, let's discuss what's going on this week. So I know, Deb, you've got your show tomorrow. So plug, plug, plug.
Sure. Pick a photo, write that number on my chat or my topic wall, and then you'll see some other choices like word bank and or a quote or a lyric or some such thing. Just combine them into a poem. But the most important thing is to get that number up there so I can give you your photo.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And Rack and Tour, you are Tuesday.
Yeah, thinking along the lines of superpowers, but not comic book X-ray vision type flying superpowers, but, you know, the things that people are actually, you know, good at, kind of known for, you know, do you make an amazing breakfast, or, you know, are you like known for being able to, you know, clean a carburetor, you know, what's your superpower, but, you know, in terms of reality.
And I will just put out there that this is not the naughty room, so, but feel free to put those there. Because, you know, super is as super does. And is anybody on Wednesday? I don't see anybody on the board.
Lady A is. I'm not sure where the topic is.
Yeah, I'm just going to have open poetry.
Oh, awesome,
oh.
Awesome, awesome. Got
I thought you were
going to
do the show you had the rain date for.
I'm sorry?
The show that you had to cancel with all those prompts that everybody has poems from, I thought.
Yes, you're right.
Oh, good. It's good.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't know what I'm talking about because my head has been elsewhere for quite some time now. But I do have okay, what is it?
Nova Scotia.
Lady, give Sky a call tomorrow and ask her to pop up that topic for you. She has the info.
Okay.
Sorry, Priyami.
Yeah,
no, you're fine. And Sweet, what's up for Thursday?
The final third, part three of the trilogy of fantasies and fairy tales is Thursday night. So I'm very excited to put out the fairy tale trilogy.
Awesome. That has been a fun series. And then we have the Man Cave on Friday with Stephen and Hatter. And what do you guys know what your topic is for next Saturday?
Yes, we're doing the Unrhyme show, and our topic is orange, because nothing rhymes with orange.
You know, I had a friend who had a band, and that was their name of the band, was Nothing Rhymes with Orange.
There you
go.
That was,
but I am good.
A side note, the Man Cave's been postponed to next month. Hatter may or may not do something, but no Man Cave.
Ooh, so Friday night's a surprise. All right. I'm good with that. You know, surprises keep things interesting. And Rack and Tour, you are up on the board. And so if you guys pull him up, I shall hit play to hear his soothing voice. If I can find where I put it, here it is. And here we go.
Integrity by Rack and Tour. Every day feels like a battle, hanging on to that which makes life worth living. So when you turn your back like you no longer care, don't be surprised to find me unforgiving. It would be naive to draw a line in the sand before the wind has a chance to die. It's hard to know where you stand when what you're fighting for is based on a lie. I refuse to stop believing. True love is worth enduring any pain. Does fighting this endless battle prove that I'm totally insane? Defending what I believe, struggling to understand. I'm in no shape to run, determined to face whatever the universe has planned. End poem.
It's hard to know where you stand when what you're fighting for is based on a lie. So stab me a little deeper in the heart, why don't you? And because that is kind of the basis of everything. How do you know what you're fighting for? And when is a lie just a misperception? And where do you determine what is that place where the fork turns or where you push through? I mean, oh, you're killing me. But I love your love conquers all. I love that you're going to fight tooth and nail. I love that even when every day feels like a battle, you are determined to see it through. And I think that that is a wonderful thing to see, because more and more often it feels like it's just in the movies, you know? And yeah. And AP, what are your thoughts on Rocking Towards Peace?
Yeah, look, I mean, the lovely thing about this piece is really sort of summed up to me in the last stanza, that defending what I believe, striving to understand, I'm in no shape to run, determined to face whatever the universe has planned. There's something quite, you know, sound about that. I mean, in my particular case, with a very wonky Achilles, my specialist has told me I'm not allowed to run anyway. And so that sort of,
yeah.
You know, I could relate, you know, that I wish I could run, but unfortunately I'm not allowed to. And if I do, I'll probably just rip the Achilles again and then I won't be even walking. So I sort of, you know, have that sense of sort of, you know, a poem that applies to you and you apply it to yourself quite explicitly. And I did in that last stanza, so I enjoyed it.
Thanks, AC.
And Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, I really like this piece. I like the optimism in it. It's laced with a lot of not regret, but disappointment and sadness. But despite all of that, you bounce back and defending what you believe in and determined to face whatever the universe has planned, you haven't given up. So that's the important part of it, you know. You haven't been entirely soured by a bad experience. So this is a very, to me, it sounds like it's a very personal poem for you. And it just, you did a really good job with sharing the fact that you still believe in love.
Thank you, Lady.
You're welcome.
And Ms. Debra Lee. Are you on mute, darling?
I am. I agree with the strength of that closing stanza, for one, especially the last line, determined to face wherever the universe has planned. Like, even if you don't have a choice, it still shows strength to say that, you know, you're just determined to do so. And then in the rest of it, wow, it's hard to know where you stand when what you're feeling is based on a lie. I refuse to stop believing true love is worth enduring any pain, but does fighting this endless battle prove that I'm totally insane? I don't know about insane, but it takes two to tango and to battle, and one person or the other can't leave it. One person or the other can break it, but the rest takes two, and sometimes it's hard to give up those fairy tales and stop believing, and sometimes you have no damn choice. Really powerful.
Thanks,
Debs. And And Miss Sweet, your thoughts?
Well, I love the title of Bone Integrity. You know, anybody that refuses to stop giving a true love. What a lovely, you know, piece of integrity you have. And I love that was the universe's plan. It's a beautiful light.
You're breaking up a little bit, Sweet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got to move my head back to where it was. Otherwise, my phone goes, screw you. But I love that you want to believe in true love, and you're going to fight that endless battle to prove that you're totally insane for someone you love. And I think, you know, beautiful, sweet, true women will love you for that. And connect most what won't. So hopefully you are fighting for a beautiful, true woman.
Aww. And on the flip side of the fight, I've got myself on the board. It's not the poem that I was hoping to find, because I wrote one that was four parts of perfect for this show that I have been searching for 2 days, that apparently I can't, I'm sure I'll find it tomorrow. Anyway, the joke's on me, and it is at the end of a fight, basically. So we shall see what this brings. And it goes like this. I carried myself on a dream once, blazing on glaciers, drowning on time that lost memories. I tripped over the past few years, and I don't know what to do with the fact that I have never been so deep in the ass end of a season, and I don't know what else I have left to give when I can't find clean air enough to breathe, dying in the decay of my own indole-infused hope. I hear tell that love still floats on choppy seas, and I learned how to surf through the years. I couldn't find you in my eyes. The soundtrack of my dreams builds arias from anguish and drags me into faith broken on the truth of what was, or thriving on what could, but is, well, I can't find my footing on either side of Occam's razor, and brine burns as bad as the fire and ice that punctuates my own failure. Failure to thrive alive in cells alone, where existence flays flesh in lifetimes of the best of times and the worst of times. I have no silver linings left to buy a clue in the clouds of truth that I just can't see without my sunlight, and my mix hasn't bore her yet, trading half a life, never to be united, but always to be in love. But I could run into the mountains and fly in the mist that falls to the humid earth, greeting each day with a smile meant just for me. I hear those lullaby nights and sleep longer than I should, missing real-time talks with yesterdays that I can't touch. Go, go, gadget arms aren't long enough to hold your face in my hands and carry the warmth of your skin through words that never had to be said, empty in the myth of should. But it's the could that steals sanity with the truth of possibilities, and the dream through distance cackles in its torturous ways of breaching distance with pain. I see you in all the corners you stop showing me. I feel my undoing in the smiles you give away. Perhaps my just desserts are that cold serving on a platter made from the silver stolen in dreams that I can no longer trace with my finger. I carried myself on a dream once, blazing on glaciers, drowning on time that lost memories I can never forget. End poem.
Wow. That is absolutely beautiful, my love. But I'm not even sure where I start with this one. I like to start the actual on the dream. I carried myself on a dream once, blazing on glaciers, drowning on time that lost memory. I think that's just beautiful. And then as you go down and you have no silver linings and you can run into the mountains. By the way, this is one of the poems that you take for a line. I have a whole different poem. So I carried myself on a dream once. I tripped over the past few years, and I hear tell that love still floats on choppy seas, the soundtrack of my dream filled Eris from the anguish. Failure to thrive alive and so alone. I have silver mining left to buy a clue in the clouds of truth. I could run into the mountains and fly in the mist. I hear those lullaby nights and sleep longer than I should. Go-go gadget things aren't long enough. It could, but still empty with the truth of possibilities. I see you in the corner. You stop showing me. I carried myself on my dream once. So, again, you have a poem within a poem. And I just love how it goes all the way through that and how you repeat. And, again, I'm rambling, but I always ramble when I talk about poetry. So your language and your metaphors and your imagery and it flowing through this, I find stunning and beautiful. And I will go ahead and let AP go ahead and say everything he wants to say about this poem.
I love the fact that it layers thoughts one upon the next, and so by the time you get to the third last stanza, but it's the cord that steals sanity with the truth of possibilities, and the dream through distance tackles in its torturous ways of reaching distance with pain. It gets to the point where it's really quite dark, but it gets to that point without you even knowing it's taking you there, and it's a very, very finely nuanced rock. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Sweet, are you muted?
And Deb, your thoughts, please.
I had to save this.
Pre-bird,
this was like so powerful. So I don't even know which part to pick. I also was blown away by the entire stanza that started with "Go go gadget arms aren't long enough," but I'm struck back further with the "but is." Well, I can't find my footing on either side of Occam's razor, and brine burns as bad as the fire and ice that punctuates my own failure. I was like, damn, it wasn't you were woe with me, it's not my fault, all your fault. You were right there punctuating your own. Failure to thrive alive in cells alone where existence plays flesh in lifetimes of the best of times and the worst of times. This is really an incredible piece. Is it bad to say that I'm kind of glad that you didn't find the other one? Because this is one hell of a shame.
Thank you. No, it's not bad at all. Thank you.
You got to agree with that one. Lady A, your thoughts?
This is really very beautiful and entirely sad. There were several places that, but starting off, just start the first line. I carried myself on a dream once, blazing on glaciers, drowning on time that lost memories. Like, how do you come up with those kinds of lines? I just think they're so amazing. And I think, you know, when I can't find clean air enough to breathe, you can almost feel the congestion there. And, you know, how you surfed through the years and couldn't find you in my eyes. I just thought the whole piece was just really moving and emotional. And trading half a life never to be united but always to be in love. Never to be united. Wow. The whole thing, just, I mean, I could go line for line, and it's just a really, to hold your face. I, go-go gadget arms aren't long enough to hold your face in my hands and carry the warmth of your skin through the words that never had to be said, empty in the myth of should. This whole poem is just amazing, really and truly.
Oh, thank you. And that whole half a life is, I just can't see without my sunlight. And my Nyx hasn't bore her yet, because Nyx and Erebus, the goddess of night and the god of darkness, one of their nine children, well, I think they had like thousands, but one of their basic nine children is daylight. And for daylight to come out, night has to spend those 12 hours in Hades. And so, you know, she trades half a life, never to be together. So it tends to be my favorite of all godlike romances, but yeah, thanks, that's awesome.
You're welcome, this is brilliant.
And Raconteur.
Yeah, I hate that I remember that gadget arms line more than anything else in the poem, because the entire poem is beautiful. And you know, as I've been chastised before about some of my more comical imagery. The whole thing is just a gorgeous thought. And it's you know, that there's a lot of sadness in it as well. The line about the indole, it sticks out in my head. There was, you know, quite a bit of relatable emotion in this. Holding his face, not seeing him in your eyes. The ultimate love story that you're talking about too, the half a life, you know, spent, you know, apart, you know, in Hades, in the dark, for the darkness and the light to come out. This, it's just stunning the way that you pour your thoughts onto paper in such a relatable and emotional way.
You guys are awesome. I picked this one because this is the aftermath of When Do You Give Up? This is that tortured space between, do you fight for it or do you finally get the clue after, you know, getting your ass kicked by the universe for so long that maybe this is not the path for you? And this is, to me, both sides of that, you know. You want to, you should, but you shouldn't, and you fail on both counts, and it's a painful place to be. And I appreciate you all making me feel like my runner-up is more than worthy. So thank you guys, you're awesome.
You know, I'm also thinking that you added that go-go gadget line to give it a little bit of a lighter second in your brain as you read it, so that you maybe wouldn't get choked up with emotion as you tried to read the whole poem. Just a weird thought.
I don't think when I write. When it comes to my pain, it just comes out how it comes out. But I remember that line, and that line is because the person I'm writing about is literally 1,000 miles away, and it was always my face in his hands, or his face in my hands, as I would just hold him there and just be all, you know, mushballs. And I couldn't reach him. My hands aren't long enough. My mind went right to that. This is what happens when you have four kids that watch cartoons. My mind went full on, just arms out. And I was much more Mr. Gadget over Mr. Fantastic. So, you know, with his rubber arms and whatnot from the Fantastic Four. But it did tend to, you know, lighten that up a little bit, which,
yeah,
you know, isn't a bad thing. Not
no,
at all.
It's not. It just feels like your brain gave you a breath there, and the breath was that image of go-go gadget, and it made it to the poem. So
there
even
you go.
When
that
you're
works.
Not thinking, yeah, your brain's got your butt covered.
And you know, for as much as my brain hates me, I appreciate those little things. And we have Miss Sweet up on the board. So if you're ready, darling, it is your turn. You're breaking up.
Is this better? Oh, yes. Better? Okay. Yes. All right. Just give... Take my apron. I flopped, exhausted, onto the bed. Red hair splattered on the pillow. Gray matter mumbled nefarious plots and twisted fairy tale left. Driving movie screen and back of eyelids green. Life via 20-foot tall screen and high depth surround sound. Listening to conversation, distracted, crushed. Dismissed the apostasy. And fire, the eroticism, tantrums of salaciousness, embracing all the power of seductiveness. Eyes wide shut, I am three. My monochrome world turned my face ash gray. Silent storms brew, lava words spew from lips. Betrayed by lies, slithering between lips to smile. Punched on my face without a touch, leaving purple bruises upon my eyes. I buried me in you. Did I give you a reason for this treason? Am I your life's mistake or the emotions behind deceit? Confusion, now my mate, I weep. Yes. Love you. But I don't know if we'll survive.
Girl, you know, I was doing a really good job of not letting it fall out of my face. I really, really was. And then you pop up here and, you know, first of all, your word choices in this are stellar, like stellar. And I don't think I've slept a decent night in 24 years. And so I am well-versed on that mind that runs over things incessantly, that is larger than life, in your face when you close your eyes, when you're supposed to be asleep, and everything replays and you listen to those deconstructed conversations. I love that line. I love listening to conversations deconstructed. I live in that place. And it doesn't matter which way you pick it apart. It doesn't matter that the pain lands the same. It doesn't matter the logic. It doesn't matter the love. It doesn't matter the truth of it, what makes sense. The pain lands the same. And try as you might, and you fight for that love. And there is a huge gaping difference between forgiveness and forgetting. And it's not that one doesn't want to forget. It's that broken touch, that broken trust takes every ounce of energy to start to heal. And every tiny backstep isn't a tiny backstep. It is a back to the beginning. And it's gaping over and over and over. And how many times can you start back at the beginning of broken trust before you just can't breathe? And that closing line, that doubt, that hope and that doubt, it breaks me. It breaks me in beautiful, beautiful ways. This is my new favorite of yours. This breaks my soul. This is honest and beautifully written. And I am in awe, my dear. And I'm raconteur. You're welcome. It's a painful place to be, and I hope the other side is all starlight and rainbows and fabulousness, and it comes real quick. Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is another beautiful poem. You like to wrap your darkness in these deceptive images. You know, starting with the torn white apron, you know, everyone thinks of white, you know, that they want to go white dress, but you're shifting the role a little bit with that one. And then, you know, you shift into your hair and the description of everything else, and the brutal honesty in this, especially in the end, is the most relatable part. You know, people say, you know, you don't choose who you love, you know, and that kind of reminds me a little of what Pretty Bird was saying too about not knowing how to unlove someone, you know. But I think there comes a point where you kind of reevaluate what the relationship was and how much of it was, you know, through rose-colored glasses and you know, hindsight is 20/20 and all that, and if you knew what you knew, if it still would have worked out the way that it did, and, you know, all those what-ifs and all that doubt wraps up into the, question about surviving, and it just makes it that much harder, I think. You know, you kind of want to go with it, but at the same time, you almost know that, you know, well, if you do go with it, then it's likely to implode. And, you know, all of that comes out in this for me. It's ugly to watch and hard to read.
You know, there is something about a relationship that lasts years and years and years, that you never had to worry, you never had trust issues, you never had anything, you never could fathom the possibility of things, and then things happen and you can't unfeel it and you can't unsee it, and they look like the same person and they smell like the same person, but part of them is a stranger, and that doesn't go away easily. That's not to say it doesn't go away. It's just, it is a monumental effort, and it is a painful process. And Ms. Deborah Lee, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think my word for tonight is damn. where do I pick? Eyes wide shut, cry in misery. Atomic bomb treachery. My monochrome world turned my face ash gray. Violent storms brew, lava words spew from lips, betrayed by lies, slithering, they do. Lies choke, they kill, they smother, and they hurt. And all of those things show in this, especially by the time I buried me in you. Did I give you a reason for this treason? Am I your life's mistake or the emotions behind the deceit? Confusion is now my mate when I sleep. And then those two questions and that, but I don't know if we will survive. This is like a color me speechless poem. Damn sweet. Damn is the word.
Thank you, Deb.
I fully concur, because it is one that is in my bones. And Lady A, if you can comment on Sweet, and then you are on the board.
Okay, thanks. I thought this was, well, I really don't have any words because it's so painful to read. You use words like betrayed by lies, slithering between lips smiled. Like you have that vision of a snake, you know, deceiving you, and leaving purple bruises upon my eyes and crushed heart. And then the last verse I also love is, I buried me in you. Did I give you a reason for this treason? And why is it that we blame ourselves for that sort of thing, you know, that happens to us? And why do we blame ourselves instead of blaming the other person? Am I your life's mistake or the emotions behind your deceit? Confusion in my mate when I weep. Very, 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 very sad. Beautifully written, but entirely sad. Heartbreaking.
Truly. And you are on the board, Lady A.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So here's my
reply to the post, the prompt tonight. And this is called Tangle Webs We Weave. Oh, the lies we tell when we know full well, in love with the idea of being in love, a fairy tale, sort of. Inside our heads we weave many threads, woven weft then warp, stay the course, or be a dork. Questions posed need no answer, we choose to ponder. Clearly written when we are smitten, we know when one is missing. Cry and wail, they have set sail. One-sided love is like going to jail. Pretend you'll fight, lovelorn, ridiculous, like begging for a bone. Traffic lights flashing red, brighter and brighter in your head. Stop. End the fantasy. Run. Respect yourself entirely. Oh, the lies we tell when we know full well one-sided hypocrisy. Lick your wounds and be your own democracy. End poem.
You know, I kind of love this empowerment for the unrequited. It is kind of amazing because we've all been there when you have a crush or a friendship that has grown into more for one or but not quite for the other, and try as we might and as perfect as it as we feel it could be, sometimes it just isn't. And you know, there's definitely moments in that where you realize that there's nothing there to fight for. It's not something that's in place, and while it's just equally painful, it's an easier path to follow to take that turn when there isn't something tangible worth fighting for. But it is a hard place to be as well. I really enjoyed the way you wrote this. I got a little chuckle out of Stay the Course or Be a Dork. I really loved that because it was, it spoke to me of that young love, of those first crushes, of those places where everything in the moment is everything that we know before our heart is broken so tremendously so many times that we know better, you know, kind of brace ourselves a little bit, you know, unless you're like me and never learn your lesson and you know, it's you're either all in or all out, you know. But I really loved how that took me back to that place. And Miss Sweetie, what are your thoughts on Lady Higby?
She had to go. She said, great show and good night.
Oh, I didn't even see it. Oh, bye, Sweetie. And so, Deb, what are your thoughts?
Well, for one, I thought the couplets were great. And right from the beginning, oh, the lies we tell when we know full well in love with the idea of being in love. So many people, all of us, at one time or another, or 10 times, get stuck in that trap of the idea of being in love. So starting there was pretty powerful. But all the way through with stuff like traffic lights flashing red, brighter and brighter in your head, stop! But you don't. So it's just like, run, respect yourself. I liked it that part was included. And then at the end, back to those lies. Oh, the lies we tell when we know full well. One-sided hypocrisy, lick your wounds, be your own democracy. It comes back to some power in the end. Be your own democracy. You know, if you don't, who will? Really great job putting them in couplets, Lady A, and a powerful message start to finish.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
You know, I feel like the question has been posed, but I think if we were really brutally honest with ourselves, we do know the answers. We do know if it's a right or wrong thing to do. We do know if it's a right or wrong fit in the relationship. And the other part of it is that to fight for something you know is not there, why do we pour ourselves out and give ourselves to someone who is not worthy of having us, someone who doesn't want us?
That is true.
For this Yeah, that's where I'm coming from with this. Like, we know those answers. You know those red lights. And we just choose to ignore them. And
but
then
that's
we sit there and
unrequited
why
thing.
We're in this
ocean,
you know?
Yeah, and that's when it's that one-sided thing where the affection and friendship is mistaken for something more, or the hope of possibility of something more, in those wildly romantic notions that we all go through. But I think that it's in those moments there's a better discernment, even if we don't want to see it. It's a choice at that point to hope for the possibility of something more or not, where the original, my original question was, when you're already in a relationship, when you're already in love, when you know it is a real thing, and it is both sides together, at what point is it a test of fortitude, of your strength and love, or a test of futility, and you know the universe just slapping in the face and saying it's not for you?
The question would probably be asked if you're both in a mutually loving relationship.
That's not true.
What is
it's
what
always
is there
circumstances. To... It's not about the love. This is above and beyond the love. The question is, if you are in love, if it is a loving relationship, is that enough to sustain through all things, or do circumstances sometimes suck so bad that you have to work through the ins and outs of leftover relationships or distance or whatever the case may be to get back to that point? Or do you just stop and be like, it's too painful, it's too much, maybe it just wasn't meant to be in the first place, and you know, ended at that point? It's not an easy place to be. It's not something that you know innately. It's not about the love. It's everything else other than the love. If the love is there, and that's not a question, if it is real and it is true, then is it enough to conquer all of those circumstances, or will believing that break you because the universe says it's not for you? That has nothing to do with knowing whether it's right or wrong. The love is there. The love is true. The love is real on both sides. It's everything else fighting against you. And it's a really hard place to be because logic might say this, but passion says that. And I mean, and by passion, I don't mean lust. I mean the love, the affection, that soul connection wants to pull you to believe that it is enough for everything. Sometimes circumstances of real life and the people that it affects stops that. And it's a hard thing to know whether it's where you should be or not, because, you know, you want to believe love conquers all. Rack and Tour, if you could comment on Lady A's poem, and then Deb, you are on the wall.
Yeah, I love the way you handled this. The longing in it is very relatable. The idea of a relationship that you're hoping for, I think, comes through in the way that you put these couplets together. I don't know. I mean, I love the way you did it. It's just, you know, it brings other questions to mind, in the sense of, you know, this is what you believe in everything. It's hard to imagine that, you know, you haven't found it yet, because, you know, it's not something that's easy to argue with, the way that you look at these things, and it's relatable, and you know, I could see why it vexes you, and you know. what I can't see is why it eludes you so. So yeah, and I could understand the frustration in that very much. I thought it was beautiful.
Thanks very much.
It was,
I think,
very beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody.
And Deb, you're up. But go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I was just going to say that. I think sometimes, depending on your personality, if you have a strong personality it often is intimidating to the opposite sex. And I guess for me, I've learned to protect myself in a lot of different ways, and perhaps that's not something that a lot of guys are attracted to. You know, a strong-willed woman.
You know, I think that there is, societally speaking, there is a big discrepancy between the traditional expectation, especially in the older generation, not so much in millennials, the traditional feminine, not necessarily roles, but, you know, expectations. And I lean masculine. My personality is kind of abrupt and assertive and whatnot, and I'm very strong-willed. I haven't come to a big group of people that are not drawn to that, but I am very polarizing, and I can only speak from my own experience. I am very polarizing. People either love me or hate me. There's not a whole lot of middle ground. There's not a, I can take or leave her. There's not a whole lot of that in my world on any front. And I think that due to my unfortunate history, I designed my life that way unwittingly because I am honest. I am about as honest in all things as I've ever seen anybody, and people don't know what to do with it, and it makes people run for the hills. And
yeah.
You have those who want to run, and then you have those who appreciate it, and those are my people. I don't know how to chase somebody's friendship. I don't know how to give a crap if they don't want to be there because it hurts too much. And I was unfortunate that my unfortunate history was at my budding adulthood. And so it's my whole adult life. If you don't like me for what I am, I don't need you here. And it sounds like it's all good things, but it keeps people away from me, and it makes it very difficult to make those connections. So when I do, that I have the expectation for my own self that they're going to be there a while. And when that doesn't work out, it puts me in a tailspin of this mess of crap that is tonight's topic, because you don't know what to do. You don't want to put all that work into something and then not fight for it, not have it be important enough to fight for. And, you know, but, you know, I'm stubborn. And sometimes, you know, the powers that be, you know, kick me in the gut and be like, stop it. You know, get over yourself. Who do you think you are? Move the F on. And it's a hard line to discern. But for my own experience, Lady A, if the people, or the men specifically, that you are drawn to, like a meeker woman, I think that you need to find a few tells, a few little things to be able to discern whether or not they cut the mustard. Because if they are not willing to accept the parts of you that you are learning to embrace and empower yourself in, then they aren't worth it. It doesn't matter how good they are, they're not good enough. And so yeah. Long as you remember that, I think you'll be fine. It's a hard place to be, but you are more than worthy. Don't sell yourself short. And Miss Deborah Lee, I know it's after time and I'm sorry, but you're up.
Okay. This is called Knowing When to Fold Them and Beat Feet. And here we go. Silence brews fingernails on chalkboard agitations. White hot cools to red and drops to warm, then cold. Now cold disillusions replace all the stimulation. And smacking forehead on stucco walls grows old. White hot cools to red and drops to warm, then cold. The cards laying on the table mark the game's end, and smacking forehead on stucco walls grows old. With confrontations fracturing too, if nobody bends. The cards laying on the table mark the game's end. Rounds 2, 3, and 99 all end the same, with confrontations fracturing too if nobody bends, as we stop moving the pawns in this lover's game. Rounds 2, 3, and 99 all end the same. Now cold disillusions replace all the stimulations as we stop moving the pawns in this lover's game. Silence brews, fingernails on chalkboard agitations. End poem.
I'm going to say this. First of all, I've got that was to the soundtrack of The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. It was in my head the entire time, just playing in the background, which I thought was awesome because I love that song. But this is absolutely perfect. I'm not a big fan of pantomimes because sometimes the redundancy is a little more powerful than words, but this did not have that problem. Every word was kind of like a judge's gavel. It is like the end, you know, like it's you know, the judge's gavel. My mind is broken. I apologize for my lack of words. But
kind of like this, that.
This is when, and smacking forehead on stucco walls grows old, and you know, that's that whole test of futility right there, and it's sad when it is everything, and it is fire, and it is the stars itself, and they no longer shine. It is, you know, and nobody wins. And so I tend to be like, well, if nobody wins, then everybody loses. But nobody wins, nobody loses. It's and that's the pain of it, where there's no clear sign. If somebody betrayed somebody else, if there is a lack of love, if it is something tangible and discernible, or, you know, I can't stand the sound of you chewing food, something, anything, you know, then at least you can understand. But when it's, you know, a scratch hand, when nobody wins, when it's a tie and it's neutral and it's absolute zero, but you've got that underlying affection, it's like that little star is like a piece of glitter in a black void, and it's still there and you want it to grow, but that space is vast, and who takes the first step after so many steps have been taken, and what do you do? And this lands in that spot for me. So A, perfect on the prompt. B, it's probably my favorite pantomime of all time. And
wow.
C, there are lines in this that stop me. As we stop moving the pawns in this lover's game, where, you know, that one step at a time across the board, nowhere near each other, nobody doing anything for anything. It is, I'm over here trying by myself and they're over there trying by themselves. And unless we're trying together in full disclosure, honesty and openness, there's no place to move. And it's a hard place to be. And in this, it isn't harshly worded. It isn't full of disdain and despair. It is written silence. It is that space where you're too tired of fighting, you know? And it is just beautiful. And Lady A just dropped. And so, Raconteur, what are your thoughts on this perfect pantomime?
Thank you. Appreciate
yeah, I,
well, you're very welcome.
I really appreciated the repetition of it. It made it haunting for me. And I enjoy cards and I enjoy chess. So when you mentioned the pawns, it kind of put a smile on my face because, you know, to just center it around the cards, I don't think it would have been as powerful. But when you mentioned the pawns it added literally another dimension to it that I really enjoyed. You know, there's a lot of extra thought that you could read into that. The pawns in the game of chess depending on which point of view you take, can be the heart of the game. And, you know, there's entire end games based around the number of pawns and things like that. It changes the way that you look at the game, I think. And, you know, to just mention that, pushing the pawns, it affected the way my childish mind, my game head, viewed the whole piece. There's a lot of pain in this as well that you know, unfortunately relatable. But you know, and the idea that, you know, it's obvious that it was over, that you're you know, the point that you're making was also very much appreciated. So overall, I really enjoyed this a lot, Deb.
Thank you, Rick. I think it's pretty cool that you said haunting, because normally I pull out the Pantoum if I want to haunt, if it's dark, or if I want to drive something, a mega specific point to drive it. But now I've got a new thing to add to the list, that judge's gavel, because that was I really liked that analogy there. Sometimes the repeats work my nerves too, but sometimes they just drive it, pound it, haunt it. So yeah. But to have someone say they don't like Pantoums, but be blown away, it is extra special. So,
and I saved it. So it's awesome, and I think that was a perfect way to close the show, because this was a loaded discussion. I mean, there are 15 different views for what looks like something simple. Is it this or is it that? Well, if it was that easy, I wouldn't have the problem, you know? And so I appreciate all of everybody who just comes to share their stuff and their opinions and their words, and y'all are awesome. And up until the show started, there was only like three little poems on here, and I talked a lot, but I absolutely just appreciate everyone. All you guys are awesome, and sharing your opinions on these things, and it all adds value and kind of makes the show worthwhile, in my opinion, because it has nothing to do with me and my big mouth. Y'all are awesome. So,
you're awesome.
Thanks. And thank you for fixing the whole entire thing, because I freaked the F out, no lie. It was 5-4 gone. Oh,
no.
Right.
I, even though I knew I couldn't call till the second hour, I had to log in and see if it let you in, because we had the same thing last night. I had to get a quickie episode and set it up. It was like... And I knew they weren't going to change it. It happened to another radio show or two as well. So, but I'm happy I was able to help. It was an excellent show, Freebird.
Thank you. Well, you guys brought excellent work, and I love the insight, probably more than the poetry. I love the insight and everybody's view on things. And there's never any right or wrong. And I am just highly, extremely appreciative. So thank you guys so much. And I'm going to go ahead and hit that button, because I can talk for another hour. So y'all are fascinated.
Love and respect.
Love and respect. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for your